next speaker really doesn't need any introduction. She is someone that has an incredible YouTube account and in a very short period of time has captured the hearts and minds of everyone in this movement. And when we were deciding to set up Patriotic Alternative, when we were getting a movement ready, when we were talking about launching, people said, who do you want to run this organization with? And there was really only one choice. There was only one person I could think of who embodied all the virtues that somebody would need to embody in order to do this kind of job. Because people need to be able to listen, but they also need to be able to take a lot of abuse. People need to have thick skin, and they need to be able to laugh things off. People need to be down to earth, but they also need to be able to produce top-tier content. And this woman can do all of those things. She really is an absolute diamond. Please welcome Laura Towler.
Wow, thank you very much. So good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're all enjoying the second Patriotic Alternative Conference. I know that I'm very much enjoying listening to the other speakers and also having the opportunity to meet all of you. So 6 months ago, I stood in front of a crowd that was around half the size of this crowd, and I gave the first speech that I'd ever given in my entire life. Before I started with my speech, I introduced myself for the benefit of the people in the room who didn't know who I was. I said, I'm Laura Towler, I'm a YouTuber, I'm a writer, etc., etc. Today, I still do all of those things, but I also stand in front of you with a new primary focus. After the success of the last conference in September, I received a phone call from Mr. Mark Collett, and he asked me to be the deputy leader of Patriotic Alternative, to which I immediately said yes. I still sometimes find it kind of strange that I've ended up in such a public-facing role. Anybody who knows me personally knows that I'm actually quite a shy person. I'm very introverted. But the reason that I accepted the role without hesitation is because there's nothing that I care more about than England. For me and for many other people who are in this room right now, our own personal comfort must come second to the duty and the struggle that lies ahead. Because for us to choose to do nothing, or for us to choose to say nothing, then that is a choice for us to lose England, and that is not an option. We were lucky enough to be born British. Although luck doesn't really come into it, because I didn't just spin a wheel and then pop out of a hole in the ground in Leeds one day. I was born British, to British parents, British grandparents and British great-grandparents, and so on. We are here because of a conscious decision. We are the heir to a genetic and cultural legacy that goes back for millennia, and it is our duty to nurture and protect that. Our ancestors were once the envy of the world. We come from a tiny island that once wielded the immense strength, intellect and resource to create the largest empire that the world had ever seen. We ruled over a quarter of the globe. We come from the same stock as Alfred the Great, Sir William Wallace and Boudicca. And British minds are responsible for some of the most iconic pieces of work in history. Shakespeare, Dickens, Alexander Fleming, Sir Isaac Newton, just to name a few. Our science, technology, healthcare and arts have had such a huge impact on the entire world that many people today even struggle to define what British culture is. That's what happens when aspects of your culture become the norm for billions of people. There's no doubt that we were once the envy of the world. But today we're beginning to fall. And it's a daunting thought to consider that what we are and what we're capable of could all be gone within the century if our generation decides that we're too comfortable or too cowardly to act. Fortunately, that doesn't appear to be the case. And I know I'm not the only person in this room who has begun to notice the aura of optimism and bravery which is beginning to fill the air. We have had enough. We will not be intimidated into silence while our people become a minority in their own country. We will not just accept the indoctrination and abuse of our children as a mere side effect or slight burden alongside the obligatory increase in foreign takeaways and NHS cleaners that we never wanted or needed anyway. We will not permit the continued dismantling of our identity and the belief that widely different people from across the globe are mere interchangeable economic units. And we will not be told who we are and what we're allowed to do by a Bengali Muslim communist who can't even work out whether she's English or not. She's not English, by the way. We don't seek out their permission, and we don't seek out their approval. And for all the things that I mentioned above, we are not, and we never will be, sorry. The odds may be stacked against us. We're fighting a powerful enemy who is dishonourable, ruthless, and cunning. But history is full of unlikely victors, and we have three very powerful weapons in our arsenal. We have truth, we have honour, and we have nature. G.K. Chesterton wrote that the true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him. So while our enemy is guided by fear, resentment, and greed, we are driven by a merciless love. And astonishing consequences can befall when men are driven by love. Would we be fools to underestimate how serious our role is in the story of Britain? If we triumph, will people look back and say that it started here? Will books in the future write, "It all began when a bloke called Mark organised a camping trip"? Patriotic Alternative will not be another stale movement with lukewarm leaders and soulless solutions. While our competition argues among themselves over who is the least racist, we will be totally unapologetic in our approach. We were never asked if we wanted this course for Britain, but you can bet your last pound that they're going to know what we think. And I can promise every single person in this room that if Mark and I ever receive that phone call, you know, the one that comes with a few all-inclusive trips to Israel, then we will both decline. There are so many things that we need to change, but we have the best people and we have solutions. Today I'm going to talk about one of those solutions. The topic which I've chosen to talk about today is a topic that we're not really allowed to talk about as part of mainstream discourse. It's outside the Overton window, although we are getting there. It's a topic that's often very misunderstood and misrepresented, sometimes accidentally, but sometimes intentionally. And it's a topic that often makes people feel very uncomfortable, although I doubt it will make anybody in this room feel uncomfortable. Today I'm going to talk about repatriation. So I've broken my speech into three parts. Number one, what is repatriation and why is it necessary? Number two, how could we implement repatriation? And number three, I will respond to some common objections about repatriation. So what is repatriation and why is it necessary? Repatriation, also known as remigration or deportations, is the return of somebody currently living in Britain to their country of birth or their ancestral homeland. Repatriation will be a key part of Patriotic Alternative's solution to restoring Britain to an overwhelmingly ethnically British majority nation, a figure of ideally 95% or above, at which point policies will be put in place to ensure that our percentage of the population does not fall. Even if we closed our borders today and not a single immigrant ever came to Britain, we would still end up becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of the population because of the disproportionate fertility rates among the different ethnic groups who are here. As I'm sure you're all aware, a fertility rate of 2.1 children per woman is required for a population to stay the same size in a first world country. Our fertility rate in Britain is currently 1.8. According to the University of Oxford and various peer-reviewed studies, native British people currently have a fertility rate of around 1.5. But where the problem really lies is that black women have a fertility rate of 2.5 and Pakistani and Bangladeshi women have a fertility rate of 3.5 and above. Without anybody else ever migrating here, our share of the population will still continue to get smaller and smaller because of this. So we have a few choices. We can get into a breeding competition with the other ethnic groups, but this doesn't really fix anything because these people are still here and all the problems that come with them. And why should we have to get into a breeding competition on our own territory anyway? We'd be competing against people who already have extremely high fertility rates. Our population would explode. We'd have no schools, no houses. We'd ruin the countryside. The problem isn't that there are too few of us. The problem is that there are too many of them. The second choice would be to ensure that other ethnic groups didn't have any children or they had less children. This choice is also problematic. I don't see how we could ever implement this in a humane way. Human beings have a natural desire to have children, to pass on their genes, to have offspring. And all human beings have the right to do this. They just don't have the right to be in our country. And thus, the most efficient and humane way for us to fix our changing demographics is to begin implementing repatriation. So are we going to refuse to talk about repatriation and become a minority in our own country? Or are we going to start talking about repatriation? How can we implement repatriation? Many people misunderstand what being a nationalist is and what repatriation is. People seem to think that we're going to force everybody to do DNA tests. And if you are just 1% British, then I'm sorry, but you are on the next helicopter. Repatriation does not mean rounding up every single person in the country who isn't British and sending them to camp somewhere. It's something that can be mutually beneficial to both parties. There are two types of repatriation: forced repatriation and voluntary repatriation. Patriotic Alternative supports both. We support the forced repatriation of two groups. Illegals. This is estimated to be around 1.2 million people at the moment, but God knows how many it really is. And criminals. Under UK immigration law, the Secretary of State has the power to make an order of deportation against a foreign criminal if they have been sentenced to 12 months in prison or more, a criminal court makes a recommendation of deportation against their sentence, or if it's beneficial to the public good. So that's forced repatriation, two groups. Of course, deporting illegals and criminals will only improve our demographics marginally. So we have to also look at the rest of the population. The problem isn't elderly people who have lived here all their lives and worked hard and pay taxes. The problem is younger immigrants and their descendants of childbearing age. Repatriation is a numbers game. We have a population of around 66 million people, and according to the last census, which came out in 2011, we were just under 82% white British. Now, those figures are almost a decade out of date, but we can use public immigration figures and fertility rate figures to conclude that by the next census, which will come out in 2021, we will be around 75% white British. So 3/4 of people in the country are British and 1/4 of people aren't. Our goal is to increase that 75% and get it up to around 95%. This brings us to voluntary repatriation. Everybody in Britain who is not ethnically British will be offered voluntary repatriation. We will offer to buy their passports back from them for a sum of £15,000 each, and they will also be given a one-way plane ticket to their country of choice. That is £15,000 per person. So a couple would receive £30,000, a family of four would receive £60,000, and a family of six, £90,000. I know from my time living in Bradford, which I've spoken about on YouTube numerous times, that there are Pakistani families in Bradford that have households of 8, 10 or 12 people. So this is something that could end up being quite lucrative for them. There are so many people who live in our country who hate us, who constantly complain about oppressive white people, and who tell us that they're only here because of the empire. Well, this is your chance to leave. Wouldn't you be happier among your own people, away from the nasty white man? You can have your sought-after reparations, but it comes with repatriation to your own country. In order for us to manage this, we would have a Minister of Repatriation and a full-time team working on this. Nationalists often panic and say that we need to fix everything over the next few years. Otherwise, we'll be a minority in our own country by 2066. However, this is not the case. All we have to do is flick a switch, so that rather than becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of the population, we're actually becoming a larger and larger percentage. We didn't end up in this situation in only a few years, so it will take longer than just a few years to fix it. The problem with politicians today is that they think in five-year election cycles. They're more concerned with lining their own pockets, keeping their jobs and their social status, than they are with the future of their nation. We need long-term plans, not short-term fixes. Deporting illegals and criminals and offering voluntary repatriation will not work on its own. It's just one part of a larger plan, which would also include closing the borders, reforming our refugee policy, repealing citizenship laws such as the Right of the Soil Law, offering repatriation options for criminals who are British citizens in return for a reduced sentence, choosing not to renew visas or offer permanent citizenship to people who work or study here, championing the traditional family unit, and changing the culture within Britain. Changing the culture would include things such as English being the only language which is spoken in schools, hospitals, and government departments, changing our benefit structure, taking back control of the media and instilling a sense of racial pride in our people, taking back control of our education systems, and British children being taught that rather than hating themselves, that they are loved and valued, scrapping all diversity quotas and forced equality and integration plans, and becoming tough on law and order. If we change the above things, then we will find that the majority of immigrants and their descendants who harbour hatred and resentment for us, and those who sponge off the system, will no longer be able to do this, and they will take themselves off home. This is not going to be the kind of environment where those people can flourish anymore. And the non-British people who choose to stay in Britain will be the best ones. They'll be the ones who love our country, love our people, contribute to society, and want to live in a nation where British are the dominant majority. Even though not a single law-abiding person has been forced to do anything that they don't want to in the suggestions that I mentioned above, I know repatriation is still a sensitive topic for some people, so allow me one more chance to convince you that repatriation is necessary. This brings me to the third and final part of my speech, responding to common objections regarding repatriation. The one that I get the most, how do we know what ethnic group somebody is? I always find this to be a very strange question because I've never met anybody in my life who doesn't know what their ethnic group is. Maybe somebody might have one grandparent who they're not sure about, but generally people know what their race is and they know what ethnicities make up that race. Everything in society today is already categorised by ethnicity. Crime figures, school results, affirmative action in universities, diversity quotas. But then when it comes to repatriation, oh, I'm sorry, nobody knows what ethnicity they are anymore. I'm not buying it. People seem to think that people are going to lie to us about what ethnicity they are, but this isn't really a situation that we're ever going to be in because we're not pointing at people and saying, I think you're this, you have to go. We're simply offering voluntary repatriation. And if you want to take it, great. Another question that I always get, what are you going to do with mixed race people? I think because people have figured out that we're friends now, people always say to me, what are you going to do with Ralph? Well, I'm not going to do anything with Ralph. I feel that people usually ask this question to catch you out. It's the same as when you say that you're pro-life. People say, well, what about rape? Okay, well, what about the 99% of abortions which aren't rape? Mixed race people are currently 2% of the population in the UK, but they are the fastest growing ethnic group. But the answer is very simple anyway. As I said earlier, everybody who is not white British will be offered voluntary repatriation. This includes mixed race people. I would hope that Ralph would like to stay in Britain. I think he's a fantastic contribution to the country, and he wants Britain to be British. I can understand there may be some confusion if somebody is, say, 3/4 English and 1/4 Nigerian. Are they allowed to stay? Again, it's not about being allowed to stay. If they want to take voluntary repatriation, they can. Another objection that I get. I don't agree with somebody leaving the place where they grew up and where they have lived their whole life to move somewhere that they don't know. Well, British people have to do this all the time because they no longer recognise the area where they grew up and the place that they call home. They don't hear anybody speaking English anymore. They have no relationship with their neighbours. There is no community anymore. And the culture of their hometown has changed. So they end up moving. It's called white flight and it's a very real thing. I understand in this scenario we're talking about people moving to a different country. But if we don't consider repatriation and we start to reverse our demographics, then we might as well be living in a different country, because that's what it's going to be like for us. This is what it's already like in London, Bradford, Leicester, Birmingham, Slough, Luton, etc. So make a choice. Are you happy for white people to feel lost in their home, but not non-white people? Another objection. I'm concerned with these people having roots here. Many of them had roots in their native country before they decided to pack up and leave and make the journey here. And this didn't seem to bother them. But as I just said, if you think that roots are important and that somebody continues to experience the culture that they're used to, what about our roots? Another objection. People will struggle to just live with it and get on with it in a new country, and it will be too different and difficult for them. Across the globe, white ethnic groups are losing the only place they have to call home. We don't have anywhere else to go. And we're living with it and getting on with it rather well. We have no future in the present system. We're constantly told that we don't matter anymore. Britain is too male, too pale, and too stale. If we can live with this and carry on with our lives, then they can certainly live with the prospect of actually having a future in their own homeland. Another objection. It will be a bad life for them back home. Their quality of life will drop. But these people enrich our countries, right? I thought they built our civilization. David Lammy told me that they rebuilt our country after the war. So wouldn't they just do that in their own country? Or are you actually admitting that these people do not enrich our country? In which case, that's kind of an argument for repatriation anyway. And the final objection that I often hear, they shouldn't leave their families. I agree. Their families should go with them too. Many of them left their families to move over here to begin with. So my conclusion, I gave quite a long introduction, so I will keep my conclusion short. A couple of weeks ago, I was on the front page of the Yorkshire Post because I was named by Hope Not Hate as being one of the 8 most influential far-right YouTubers in the United Kingdom. An accolade that I'm very proud to share with a couple of my colleagues who are here today. In the paper version of the article, it came with a disclaimer which said that they were very worried that out of the 8 most influential far-right YouTubers in the United Kingdom, 2 of them came from Yorkshire. They didn't want their county to be defined by hate. When you come out as a nationalist, any declaration of love that you ever make is always met with an accusation of hate. It's something that you become used to over the years. You even start to embrace it. The truth is that my worldview isn't based on hate at all. It's based on a love for my people and our nation. I believe that every group of people on this planet have the right to their own home, where their people and their culture can flourish, where they can be away from harm and conflict, and where they can govern themselves and have self-determination. And that includes the British. And if we have to bear the burden of being villains in order to achieve that, then so be it. Thank you for listening.